hope the Camerons and the Faddles are all doing well. Everybody's body parts are healing, including any and all of my guests. If the shoe fits or the hat fits or whatever, wear it. And it is time for Arts Live and Local. Gonna send this show out to all in need of healing. And I think that includes everybody, to be honest. Some more acute than others, but it certainly applies to parts of the world. So here's some music from Arabia. Goes out to the people of Syria and all in the region. Thanks for being here, folks. Stay tuned for a full show. The arts are alive and local. Listening to some music from quite a wonderful album actually put out by Oxfam, which is an extraordinary organization that supports people in all parts of the world. Well, coming a lot closer to home. You almost couldn't come any closer to home. I have here in the studio Miss Riddle. Hi, Miss Riddle.
Hi, Carol.
Oh, wait.
Hey, Carol.
Hi.
Well, and that is Mrs. Riddle.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Oh, I should have said Ms., then we wouldn't have known. But Mrs. Mary Riddle.
Yes.
A.K.A., in our case, Laree Johnson, who is...
wearing my hat today.
Yes, she wears many hats, and today she is wearing her... Mary Riddle hat. Now, first... How do you know that's a Mary Riddle hat?
She would have worn a hat like this
from those
at that time because she was a great gardener. She loved gardening, and you would have to wear something to protect yourself, of course.
Okay, well, now let me explain for the uninitiated.
Yes.
Laree Johnson is also a very local person. She is an historian. She is an artist, a photographer, and she is also very involved with what do you call it? All the stuff that
vintage clothing stuff,
vintage clothing accessories. Good. As a matter of fact, she put out a whole beautiful book. What's the name of that?
Ladies Vintage Accessories.
Words in there. It's a beautiful book. It doesn't matter whether you're a lady or or not. Most of us aren't. But it's fascinating because Loree not only documents with real stuff, much of which is in her possession, and you can often find her wearing some of it, but also is very aware of how the clothing fits in or the accessories fit in with what was going on at the period.
Yes.
And so her presentations, which have, in my experience, been all over the map, are fascinating. This one is happening tonight at the Astoria Public Library. Fascinating. This one is happening tonight at the Astoria Public Library. It's a free presentation at 6 p.m. And I think anybody who lives anywhere around here would be interested. I know it sounds fascinating. So tell us who Mary Riddle is. You've got the Mary Riddle Diaries, 40 years of pioneer life in Clatsop County. In the 40 years, we're talking about 1879.
Yes.
To 1923. Okay.
In Svensson.
In Svensson. Yay. East East County. Rocks. We never get any recognition for anything, so I'm glad you brought it. So who is she, and how did you make connection with Mary Riddle?
Well, she is a lady that I used on the film that I produced for the Oregon Trail Crossing in 1993. Mick Alderman filmed it, and it features three pioneer women, and one of them was Mary Riddle, and that's how I got introduced to her. And so as Women's History Month was coming up, last fall I was already thinking about it, and I talked to the library, and I said, what are you doing for Women's History Month? And they said, well, we're planning, you know, we're working on it. And I said, well, what about her story instead of his story?
Right.
History. It's right. Her story, too.
I should have called Loree an historian. That's hard.
Yes,
kind of hard to say.
We can get used to it.
Okay.
I think that's good.
Okay.
So we started putting it together, and at first we were going to show the film, but we thought if we had more interaction, if I could actually read some of the diary entries, which are fascinating. I mean, it really gives you an appreciation for living today. And boy, I would encourage every young person. I mean, this is a story of one of the first white women that settled in that area east of Astoria. And she actually lived to 1929, but she had stopped making her journal entries in 1923. She was born in 1840 near Michigan, and they decided to move west in 1878. And so I was going to read just a bit of the beginning part of her diary, just to kind of give you a flavor of it. May 8th, 1878, Wednesday night. Now I intend to write a diary of our trip to the far west. I intend to write each day's travel at the end of the day of all that we see and do. And now, to begin with, I just say that we are in Dow City tonight, and as far as I know, the whole camp is the happy one. We started this morning from the dear old home. How very sad it is to break up one's home and leave the good friends behind to go out and seek a better place. So many of the dear old friends came this morning to say the last goodbyes. The yard was just full of our friends when we started to drive off. How hard it is to look back at the weeping ones that we are leaving. But it has to be parting and meeting and parting in this life. Now, here we are in Dow City, 7 miles from home. We come out here and camped so our friends from all around would come into camp to visit with us, which they are doing now. The whole camp is like a swarm of bees moving about from camp to camp. We have so many friends for miles around. I can't read the writing. It is like last night at The typing is really.
This is good you're having this read through. Tonight will be perfect.
Right.
Yes.
Last night, we never put up our tarps the whole long night. Lots of friends stayed up all night. I laid down once, just a little while. Moses never went to bed at all. There is a dark, threatening cloud laying off in the west. It looks like we may get a drenching before morning. Now I must go and call on John and Jenny Coburn for the last time. So when I read this, I think of how it would be to leave knowing that you are never coming back. I mean, today you just get on a plane and you go over to the East Coast. But this was, you know, a couple thousand miles, and they were leaving from Iowa. And they were not rich people at all. They were farmers, and they were trying to make a better life. So Moses came ahead. They stayed in Oregon City for a while, and he came ahead to look around and scout out the area and decided this place in Svensson would be perfect. And
his name was Moses Riddle, I presume.
Uh-huh.
So they're not Scandinavians.
No.
So
they had friends that had come out here and had said how wonderful Oregon was. And so this whole first part is they're just their trip. All of the things that they ran into and what people were telling them on the trail about, oh, it's there's fearful Indians up ahead and be careful. And as a matter of fact, they never ran into any bad situations other than a couple of days of bad water, alkali water, or not finding a good stream or something to camp by. And there were a couple times as they were passing that they were finding whatever little sticks they could, because if they didn't have some kind of wood to make fire, they couldn't cook. They ran into all kinds of things that it's not on our radar today.
And so when they came out to Svensson, who owned the land? I mean, did they buy land?
They were homesteading.
Okay.
So the government would give you 5 acres or so many acres,
right,
depending on, you know, how much you cleared and how much what you built.
And then you built your own home.
So yeah, that first year is in here of what they did. Mm-hmm. And she wrote 12 journals. So there are four books this thick.
This is a woman in 1870-something.
1879.
Yeah, and her background, do you know anything about why she was so literate as to be even thinking to write like this? Or did many women write diaries?
We don't find the extensive diaries intact. And the library is very lucky that they have the original diary. And then they had volunteers. Bruce Burney's mom, Vera Galt, was one of the volunteers that transcribed the original handwritten, which is very difficult to read.
Ooh, yeah.
And so this has all been transcribed, single space typed.
I see, and it's quite, it's huge.
And this is only one of them. But as I was reading it, I was just fascinated and thinking what courage, what guts she had, because they came out and, you know, when I drive through that way, I look out in the trees and I think, you know, this is all they saw when they came. Mm-hmm. There was nothing there. There wasn't a store. There wasn't anything. There were, you know, some places along the river. But the place that they chose was 2 miles from the river. And they had to walk in and make a trail and cut down trees to have even a trail to get back to their property.
Yeah.
And
sturdy people.
Sturdy people. yes.
Yeah. You, back in 1993, I have not seen this film. So what happened? What made you decide to do the film, or who asked you to do the film? And then the library had the three women picked out? Is that?
No. I selected the women, and each one is filmed in Clatsop County. Each woman has her own story and her own way of writing.
And did you portray each of them?
Yes.
So did you change your hat?
Yes, I did.
The thing I forgot to tell you, folks. In addition to the hat that I mentioned that Louis is wearing, and that's because Louie wears many hats, and every time she comes for an interview, she will be wearing an appropriate hat because she owns them. So she's somebody worth getting to know and following because it's a lot of fun and a lot to learn as well. So who were the neighbors of the Riddles? Do you know that?
Oh, yes. I started keeping track of her names.
Are there any people whose names are still around today?
Well, you know? Mrs. Van Dusen.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Churchill, Mrs. Lewis, the Hills, the Coffees, the Cussacks, the Browns, the Crows, Mrs. Lane and her baby, George Bowen, Joseph Church, Mrs. Svensson, Mr. and Mrs. Johnny Rickman, Mrs. Moody.
Oh, wow. This is so cool.
A lot of names.
Okay, folks, if you happen to be one of the locals around here, I heard the name Hill in there, although I know Jim Hill, our beloved Jim Hill, came from here.
And he did?
And somewhere he's local, but it's not an uncommon name.
No, it's not.
So it would be delightful to come and check it out, see if you can figure out whether you're related to some of these folks. And just, even if not, find out what it was like. I'm very much looking forward to it. I live in Brownsmead, and I'm sure it was as challenging.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. All over.
Yeah, this whole area, mm-hmm. especially in the countryside. So Mary Riddle Diaries, tonight, 6 p.m. at the Astoria Library, which is on 10th Street, Duane and Exchange. And there's a little parking lot mm-hmm. there. Oh, there's street parking. You mm-hmm. shouldn't have any problem. Free presentation. 40 years of pioneer life in Clatsop County, especially Svensson, which is east of Astoria. It's kind of halfway between here and Brownsmead. Oh, am I being
you're missing
geocentric? Geocentric here. So 1879 to 1923. And if Louie can't answer your questions, I'm sure she'll point you in the right direction.
They can read the journals.
Oh, you can. This is like an inch. This is an inch high journal, and that's just one of them out of four. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Really
wonderful.
Gives you a glimpse into what early life was here, because all people that came, you know, originally in that time period.
Mm-hmm. So the library owns these. Is
yes.
that right? These can be seen at the library.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What a terrific idea.
I think it would be amazing.
I hope some young people come too, because to get an understanding of what it was like.
And this is before electricity, before cars, before cell phones,
sure.
before computers, TVs.
Oh, way before all that.
I mean,
yeah.
when it got dark out, you couldn't do anything. So.
Right. So people probably got more sleep, although they probably got up very early in the morning to deal with animals and
mm-hmm.
stuff like that. So, Marie, what's your next project?
The next project? I will be doing a tea over at the Shelburne for Mother's Day, and it's amazing lace. I just recently got a different hat.
I like the name, though.
Amazing lace. Yes, and that will be on Mother's Day, the 8th. I'll probably arrange to come back and see you with my lace hat.
That's
and
wonderful.
Talk about the tea over there.
Okay, and that's, so keep track. And just watch out for Louie and her hats and the rest of the outfits she usually wears as well. Thank you so much for coming
You're
in.
You're welcome. I appreciate it, Carol.
Looking forward to this evening.
You'll get a better glimpse.
6 o'clock at the library on 10th between Duane and Exchange. Free presentation, all age. It's about how long, would you say?
We're hoping to keep it to about an hour.
Okay. So that's very doable for all ages.
There's only a small bit that I'll be able to share tonight in an hour.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Carol.
Okay. And I have some music for you from Naomi Hooley. And Naomi Hooley and Rob Stroop are playing at the Peninsula Performing Arts Center in Long Beach. Well, you know, I'm going to have to check that out because I have March 9th, but that won't do it all. I'm sure that's not right. Have a listen. Enjoy Coast Community Radio. Thanks, folks. Thank you.
dream of birds and hot air balloons. I dream of flights charted past the moon. But when I leave you, I do not know what I'll do. And so you sound your trumpet. Go, go out to war and clash with swords and horses.
And that is Naomi Hooley, and you will be hearing Naomi Hooley and Rob Stroop. And it was a simple stroke of the pen. There are, will be there on the 19th, which is next Saturday night. It's a good thing they weren't there on the 9th, because you would have missed them. And they are a total delight. The Peninsula Performing Arts Center, 7 o'clock. And it's a good idea to check them out. Some of their shows do sell out, so it's good to check it out beforehand. Speaking of shows selling out, some people work in a larger space, and so they usually have more time for audiences to get to them. And get to them, you must. So right now, I have in the studio, I have a lot of people in the studio. I have five people, one woman, not counting myself, okay? That not makes angry. Six, but, right. I have four angry men and one woman, would that be? Is that,
yes,
is
accurate.
That appropriate?
Accurate.
Okay. Yeah. 12 Angry Men opens tonight at the Performing Arts Center in Astoria. That's on 16th and Franklin. And, well, you'll be hearing lots more about the Performing Arts Center, but right now we're still trying to keep it open and alive. And theater has been happening recently. Coming back to the Performing Arts Center is very, very exciting. And we've been mixing it up with the Coaster folks and the, in meaning the Cannon Beach folks and the Astoria folks, mixing it up, meaning, well, I'm looking around the room and I see, of the Angry Men, I see two from the South County and two from the North County, and Sheila goes back and forth in between. She lives here, but she works in both spaces.
That's right.
So welcome. Sheila Schaefer is the director. God, Sheila, did you pick this play? Did you really want to direct 12 Angry Men?
I always wanted to do this play, and when the Partners of the Pack contacted me in October, they contacted me on a Wednesday saying, we hear you want to do this show. Can you have a budget proposal ready on Monday? And I'm like, yes, okay.
Okay. The world of theater, right?
Yes.
The world in Astoria, at least. So, and you did it. And how long ago was that?
I was first approached in October.
In October,
yes.
Okay. And when did you have auditions? I'm just wondering, when you have this big a cast, how long?
I had my auditions at the beginning of February, around the 5th or 6th, but I didn't start rehearsals because of you know, trying to coordinate conflicts with 15 people, basically, was kind of hairy, and no one was really available full-time until the beginning of February, so we had a slightly shorter rehearsal process, but...
But you were rehearsing, like, every day.
Not quite. No. No.
No. Well, no. It's a good thing you've got all these experienced people, then. That's possibly the main... Did someone just knock on wood?
I've been doing that for months.
Yeah, yeah, really, really. Well, but it's true, at least the four in the room right now. We have Ryan Hull, one of the Coaster Theater folks.
Indeed.
And then Bob Goldberg, one of our own locals and KMUN programmers. Frank Jagodnik, although I say Jagodnik. How do you say it?
That sounds good.
You like it? I say it the old country way. From the Coaster and many other things down there. None of these people do just one thing, obviously. You don't get paid for theater, so how could you? And Jim Dock, who is another historian and also a KMUN programmer. So you said 15 people. What did you mean by that?
Well, there's coordinating schedules. I have 12 angry men, one guard, a stage manager, and myself.
Okay. So, okay. Yes. I was just wondering whether there was more cast. So there is one other person.
Yeah, and I do have an alternate juror just in case, you know, something happened that they could step in at the last minute.
Alternate juror. Yeah. Isn't that what they do?
Yes.
For real,
yes.
Too.
Yes.
Okay, so now let's take a step backwards.
Wait a second. And the guard is Rich Mays, who's currently, for another week or so, the Clatsop County manager.
Okay. And you also have the voice of
the Honorable Judge Paula Brownhill is doing the voiceover for the judge. So I was very lucky to get her,
fantastic.
And she was a very good sport about it.
She is. Yes. She is. And to sort of turn things around a little bit, a woman judge too.
Yes.
When you've got all these angry
estrogen in there somewhere.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, so now tell us a little bit, any one of you who wants to speak up, tell a little bit about the history and the story of 12 Angry Men, the play, the movie.
Well, it first came out in 1954 with CBS Westinghouse Presents as a hour-long TV show. Presentation. And it was like 54 minutes long. You can see it on YouTube, actually.
1954.
Yes. Okay. And then Henry Fonda really liked the script and the concept, and so he approached the playwright and expanded it into a full movie. It's the only movie he ever produced. He said he would never do that again.
And he was in it.
And he was in it, yes.
And then when did it go from being a movie to being a play?
I believe there was some stage versions that were written in the 60s. The one I have was written in the early 80s, mm-hmm. Which bases a little bit more on the teleplay, the television program, because it doesn't flesh out the characters like the movie does. It basically concentrates what's happening in the jury room and the whole concept of reasonable doubt.
Okay, so there's the key word right there, reasonable doubt. We should all be thinking about that these days, but anyway, or unreasonable. So folks who have seen the TV or the movie or any one of the plays might be seeing something different this time. It's not going to be totally different, obviously, because there's a core of this.
Yes,
but
yes.
We'll be okay, so let's hear from one of my gentleman guests here. Call you a gentleman now.
Well, that's
starting tonight.
Loosely based.
Well, each other gentlemen.
Yes.
Starting tonight. Tell us how this works. Now, a lot of you were friends before you started doing the play. Are you still?
No longer.
Half the reason why we wanted to start doing this together. But yeah, I don't. It's evolved. It's definitely evolved. To be able to get together with this group of people, and then obviously under Sheila's keen and beautiful direction, that delicate balance of giving it just enough rope, and then also when not, you know, it's been fun.
To the actors?
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. She's had quite a ride.
There was one time that Sheila kind of exploded in the rehearsal room, which is in the downstairs in the pack, in a room that we pretty much locked, and it was very hot. And when I got back on my phone, was this thing saying, sorry that I exploded.
Right. So she was giving us proper motivation, basically, through the rehearsal process.
Exactly. You know. So tell us, sketch out what, unless you think it's better that you not do that for any...
Well, the only thing I'm going to offer is
none of our names are ever used in the show. We're all jurors by number.
Oh. Right. So you're actually looking at number three, myself. We got
number seven.
Number nine.
Number four.
Right. I don't know who let the even number in. I don't know. But, but you know, we're very odd and even.
Well, that's because his name is a little more difficult to pronounce, too, than the rest of you. How did that feel, being depersonalized in that way?
I thought when she was giving notes, it was great because she didn't have to worry about anything. It was like, hey, three, you know, you need to sit down there. You know, seven, what are you doing, seven? So it was great.
What do you think, Sheila? Was that helpful?
Actually, it was helpful, especially because I also have Bill Honnell and Bill Ham. So I couldn't say Bill H because they're both Bill H. So
this is incredible.
Yeah. That's a good cast.
Anybody, so that's six of our angry men. Who are the other
six? Beginning to end, okay. Joseph Oyola, thank you, and then Don Connor,
okay,
and Ryan Hall, Frank Jagodnik, Richard Bowman, Ben Van Osdell, Bob Goldberg, David Sweeney.
God, she's doing this all from memory, folks.
I've been doing this for a while.
This is amazing.
Jim Dott, Thomas Burdine.
Oh, my God.
Bill Honnell and Bill Ham and Rich Mays as the guard. And then Slab Slabinski is our alternate.
We cannot forget our alternate.
Oh, yes. Right.
Also brings really good candy.
Yes.
Well, that is an amazing cast.
Yes, I was very fortunate.
Ann Bronson is our stage manager.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Can't forget her.
So, when you need that high C, we've got it.
Does she sing? Yes. Oh, yeah. How could she not? Wow. Yeah. And so, go back to my question. Did you, other than Sheila's losing it with the rest of you, because how could she not? I'm just trembling thinking of all of you guys in one space. I don't think I'll sit in the front of the theater. Good idea. I don't know whether you can be candid, but how did it work in terms of interpersonal relations?
No, it was great. No, everybody that came to the table, like you said, it was a little shorter rehearsal process, but everybody that came to the table has a vast amount of experience.
Yes,
and to be able to work with one another, the willingness was just there at the beginning and stayed the whole way. So, no, it was an amazing rehearsal process. I wouldn't give it up to the world. Except for Bob, you know, but other than that, you know, it was great.
Yeah. Were you all familiar with the script? Before,
to varying
did
levels.
You choose? I know when I heard about this, I heard that everybody, all the men in town, were turning out to try out.
I had an incredible amount of. I had 22 men audition, and I actually had two or three more email me afterwards saying, "Did you get enough jurors?" And I think Frank said at one point that for an audition process, that's the most testosterone he's ever seen in the room at the same time for an audition.
Well, and I have to say, because I was asked to, I don't always have to do what I've been asked to, but there was a woman in our community who did comment to me on the fact that Waiting for Godot and 12 Angry Men are...
All
testosterone. Yeah. And she was a little discouraged. That's a nice way of putting it. Because it was like, when did the women get their chance?
Yeah. The next show, I think, is going to be all women. I'm not quite sure.
Well,
so you're keeping people apart. Is that it? You're segregating the men and the women.
Well, part of it is why I did, because there's two scripts. There's 12 Angry Men, 12 Angry Women, and then you have the permission from the publishing company to combine them. However, when you do that, it weakens the script a bit.
Who put together the 12 Angry Women?
The same playwright.
At the beginning?
Not Reginald Rose, the playwright, but Sergil, who adapted the teleplay.
Mm-hmm.
He did that.
Oh,
so
interesting.
Yes.
Yeah. Good take.
But it is also interesting because trying to find the rights for it, there's one publishing company who only does equity and professional.
Oh, you can't.
And then I had to contact the other one who does everybody else. Mm-hmm. So I found that interesting that there was actually two different dramatic publishing type people.
There's a lot involved, a lot more involved than people who just come to the theater and watch realize in putting together a play. Now, is this fully staged? Do you have a set?
We do have a set, but the sets are the set is conceptual, and it's for the reason is that we have to break down the set at every weekend so the North Coast Symphonic Band and the chorale can rehearse in the space as well. So it has to be very movable, very take-apartable.
Besides, you have so many people up there, you probably don't need them. So you are opening tonight.
Yes.
Tonight. This is at the Performing Arts Center. Again, this is Partners for the PAC, for the PAC. This is a benefit performance for the PAC. And it will be tonight and tomorrow night, and then at 7:30. And then Sunday at 3 o'clock. And this is, now that's from the coaster for sure. Because up here it used to be two, and suddenly I saw three, and I went, I get it.
Well, it is daylight savings.
Yes.
Ooh, yeah.
There's swing this weekend. Yeah, right. And then next weekend is Friday and Saturday night, again back at 7:30. And come to the door. Get there early. We will be there to sell you your tickets. And
cash and check only.
Thank you for mentioning that. I almost forgot. Yeah, we have no ability to use credit cards, so you'll have to borrow from your neighbor if you come without the cash or the checks. And, of course, you're more than welcome to get your cookies and your coffee and support the PAC. I want to congratulate you, Sheila, and ask the rest of you to break your legs and have a fantastic performance. This is going to be very powerful. And is there anything else people should know before they go? What age would you say this is good for?
I would not.
Are they swearing and cursing at each
other? There's no swearing and cursing, but there is some aggressive
anger
and aggressive behavior, which I don't think would be appropriate for kids under 12.
Mm-hmm. Unless it's a very special kid, obviously.
There's also a stabbing betrayal.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
good.
Just for fun.
Good. Good. Okay. So, anything else we need to know?
I guess if there, the strobe light that you talk about, if you're afraid of writhing, then you may not want to come. There's a bit of writhing that happens in the show.
No, okay. Everybody come and see this play. It's a phenomenal cast. And
even though it's, 62 years old, even though it's 62 years old, it really resonates to today.
Yeah, I think it really does. It resonates for today. And so this whole idea of, are people guilty or not, and how a completely disparate group of people can get together and try to come to a decision on something is just pretty awesome.
It's beyond relevant considering all of the, what's it called, before it goes to the jury, it's the guys who decide whether you're even going to get a hearing.
The indictment?
Yeah, but the group of people, the grand jury.
In fact, David Sweeney is actually serving on a grand jury right now.
Oh, my God.
As we speak, yes.
God, this is really kind of... But seriously, everybody has been touched by this because of what's going on in the United States at this time, where cases that were clearly, to some people, meant to go through the regular jury process, didn't even get a hearing because a grand jury said, oh, no, nothing bad happened.
Yeah.
A few people died, but nothing terrible.
And what's key with the show as well is that the defendant is of an undisclosed ethnic origin. In the movies, they say, Hispanic or something. I'm leaving that completely open-ended because I think it's very timely with what's going on right now.
Yeah.
So,
them.
Yes. Yeah, whoever you are and whoever the them is. And it would be interesting if we had a more diverse ethnic population in this area, what the jury might look like. Because I'm from the people you named, I'm saying they're all of one skin color,
yeah,
as it were.
And
so.
There was another version in 1997 with Jack Lemmon that had, I believe, 4 black men and a Hispanic man. Mm-hmm. So it was much more diversified in that movie as well.
Yeah, which would make for a whole nother. So.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for coming in. Thanks for doing the play. I am very much looking forward to this again. 12 Angry Men opens tonight, running this weekend, Friday, Saturday at 7:30 and Sunday at 3 at the Performing Arts Center, 16th and Franklin, and next weekend, Friday and Saturday. Don't wait till the last night you can, but it's better to start coming right away because then you might want to come back. This is an extraordinary cast, and as I say, I won't be sitting in the front row. a little too powerful, but it sounds terrific. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Whoa, that's going to be very exciting. Okay, folks, stay tuned. I have a little more music. This is from Michael Hurley, who is going to be playing at the Fort George this Sunday night. And Michael is a world-renowned musician. Who lives right here in our area. Lucky us. Stay tuned. Got one more guest coming in. Thanks for being here, Coast Community Radio. Michael Hurley, our very own Michael Hurley. I love to claim him. I haven't asked his permission, so what are you going to do? That's from his album, Adequan Snock, and that's Wild Geese's. And he is going to be at the Fort George 8 p.m. on Sunday, which has music every week. And it's all age. So, I have one representative here for the Astoria Art Walk tomorrow evening. Phyllis Taylor is here. She is the featured artist at the Tempo Gallery in Astoria, 1271 Commercial, obviously in Astoria, since this is Astoria Art Walk. And there are many galleries and businesses which will be taking part. Phyllis, you took a break from your flowers for a while, didn't
I did.
You? Yeah. What was it? Was it your husband's fishing, or what was that?
Oh, no, just I met all these women who fish.
That was
and
it.
So I just kind of got into that, because everybody around here fishes,
yes.
Except maybe me.
And me. But we know a lot of fishers,
yeah,
and
yeah.
And we certainly deal with it. But you are just in time for spring,
yeah.
The show Daffodils, the Harbinger of Spring, which this morning on one of the shows came out as the Hamburger of Spring. Which was pretty funny. He caught himself right away, but I thought that was pretty funny. I like Harbinger better. So what are we going to see? This is opening tomorrow evening during Art Walk. What are we going to see?
Well, for the last 2 years, I've been doing mostly acrylics, but I decided to do some watercolors. And it was shortly after the last Art Walk. You know, the last 2 weeks of February was so gray and dreary and rainy. I needed some bright color.
Still is today, isn't it?
Yeah. However, the daffodils are out now.
Yes.
So I started painting one. I go, oh, this is so cheery. And so I ended up doing 5 paintings of daffodils and narcissus.
And what size paintings are these? These are good. She's doing with her hands, folks.
Yeah. That, 12 by 14 or 11 by 14, roughly, yeah.
So close-ups of?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw one, and the detail is exquisite. It's really lovely. So, had you worked with watercolor much before?
Yeah, I still belong to the Bloomington, Indiana Watercolor Society.
Okay.
Mostly to see what my buddies are doing back there.
Well, you are another person, although you're not wearing a hat. You're wearing a scarf, but no hat. But you do wear many hats in this community. You're part of the North Coast Chorale, and you're a cellist with, who do you play with here?
The Consort of All Sorts, the little Baroque group, and then the Columbia River Symphony.
Oh, right. Okay, which is quite a bit larger than the Consort.
Oh, yeah.
So, and you were a professional back in Indiana.
Yes.
Meaning you had a day job, full-time day job.
Yeah.
So do you just stay busy all the time, or?
Yeah, I wish I was in this busy right now. Well, this has been a busy week.
Well, I'm just wondering whether the arts are your meditation, or because those are three different areas that you're dealing in, and then swinging a full-time job as well.
Yeah, I would say both music and art, painting what I want to paint, because I was a graphic designer at Indiana University, and so I had to draw whatever I was paid to draw. You
know, okay.
Textbook illustrations things like that.
Right.
So now, yeah, it is. I can go in my studio and, well, I painted most of these daffodils to The Armed Man.
Which is the piece that
we're
the North Coast Chorale is singing.
So I have it almost memorized.
What a great way. Do you think that the music influenced your painting in some way? I'm wondering. Is that?
I don't know. You're just kind of in a very, there's so much chorale type music in that you just kind of relax and paint.
Do you usually paint with
music?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
All kinds.
Well, it's interesting. How do you feel about other people watching you paint?
It doesn't really bother me.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I grew up in a big family, so.
Okay. Have you been doing it forever?
Yeah. My mother was a painter. My dad was a musician, so.
Okay.
There you go. When you grow up with it all.
Right. Right.
It's normal.
Well, I was wondering, because there are people who come in, for example, from one of the festivals in Cannon Beach, where lots of folks are standing around them watching them make art, and some people can't handle it, and some people doesn't bother them at all. And some people actually enjoy it because people mm-hmm. ask questions. It's interactive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't bother me.
And the same thing with music. Some of us have to turn off the music in order to focus.
It depends on what I'm doing, you know, and in terms of the music, you know. Yeah. Preparing difficult cello music, you know, I need to take it all apart mathematically. And I'm kind of anal that way. You know, and so, you know, then once I get it together, then I'm fine, you know. I can share it with others.
And with the painting, which is, again, Phyllis is going to be the featured artist at Tempo Gallery for Art Night, Art Walk, tomorrow night, in watercolors. What is it about flowers? Because you've been doing them. Have you always done flowers?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Well, do you actually, know? As an undergrad, I started out in botany. And, and I was going to be this big botanist, you know. But then I hit all the, well, organic chemistry was hard enough. But then when I hit inorganic chemistry, I said, I think I need to change my major.
So for botany, there's why is that?
It's just part of the biological sciences.
Okay. Interesting.
At least when I, you know, 100 years ago when I was in college.
You know. So you held on to your interest in plants.
I love plants, yeah.
Are you a gardener as well?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And I always participate in the Master Gardeners show out at the fairgrounds. And selling art, not plants, but, you know.
How does it, I'm just wondering how the... painting fulfills your love for nature and the garden flower.
I think it's playing with color. You know, where else can you get such a diverse range of colors other than flowers, you know?
In nature, so. Yeah. Do you usually or always do naturalist paintings as opposed to abstract?
Yeah, I do.
And because you can.
Well, and obviously I did so many textbook illustrations, and painting flowers is much more interesting than geology or layers of the cells and, you know, for biology textbooks and things. So, yeah. And now I can add color. Yeah, I can just have fun, you know, and that's what I'm doing, is having fun.
Great. So you recommend this?
Painting? Oh, sure. I think it's very therapeutic. I don't have to be... need therapy for anything. I'm retired, but I'm enjoying it.
Yeah. A lot of people, including myself, are afraid of visual arts because you, as I said, yours is, you know, very exacting and very beautiful. And the eye-hand coordination even. But you obviously have a lot of practice. Do you think anyone could do it
with
a lot
practice?
Of practice?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a little neighbor who's 5 years old, and I am giving her little art lessons.
Nice.
Now, very small bites.
But maybe that's a good time to start.
Yeah, I think so. You start in little bits. And I mean, I had a great art teacher in elementary school, so, and I still remember all the principles. We learned perspective in third grade, you know?
Yeah.
It can be done, you know?
Absolutely.
If somebody just points it out to you, you know?
Well, and if the arts are supported in the schools.
Yes.
Minor detail, right? Mm-hmm. Which they were and aren't. So if somebody's lucky enough to be at a school that has an art department or an art teacher or just somebody who knows how to draw.
Yeah.
And wants
to
share
it. A summer art camp or something for kids is so good too, you know.
Do you find that it's I don't know whether you would know this, it depends what kind of person you are, but that it's calming for people? So somebody who's really impatient and jumpy, would that help or would it be impossible?
A lot of it depends if they're willing to commit to practicing, you know, the details, you know, just like learning an instrument. You have to practice. You know, you have to have the pitch and the technique and stuff before you can. It's like John Keats and his negative capability in poetry. It's true. You have to master it to a certain level before you can let go and feel comfortable with it. And, you know, you can't do a race unless you practice, right? You know, same thing.
And now you're at the point in your life where you can have the fun with
it. I have the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can just forget about time.
Mm-hmm. And the colors. And the colors are.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But for daffodils, for example, mostly yellow, white, orange.
Mm-hmm. And you know, when it's so gray and dreary, that bright yellow, it just.
So do you ever do irises? Because they have the purples and the.
Yeah, because I love purples and blues, too. Yeah.
Nice, nice. It's
you
nice.
Notice that across the corral that I wear a lot of purple and blue.
Okay. Well, Phyllis Taylor is my guest, and she is the featured artist at the Temple Gallery, 1271 Commercial, for tomorrow evening, Astoria Art Walk with Daffodils, the Harbinger of Spring. And John Orr will be playing acoustic guitar during the performance, or during the art show. And the openings are 5 to 8, although I think John's going to be there 6 to 8 or something like that. So let me just let you know what is happening in some of the other galleries. Thank you so much, Phyllis. And we have the Imogen Gallery has Seattle artist Lisa Snow Lady with paintings for her first solo exhibition at Imogen. River Sea is featuring local artist Jill McVarish, who is always a delight and surprise. The show is Painting and Sculpture, Music and Rhythm, and also Jill McVarish and Stephanie Brockway. And in the alcove, Raquel Edwards. Old Town Framing is doing a silent preview of the silent auction and silent auction for Clatsop College. And Studio 11 has glass artist and printmaker Jamie Boyd and Terry Young and Sarah Lippold, who is one of the AVA artists in residence. Gala has Portland artist Eddie Morgan and Astoria Art Loft, which is from 3 to 6, a different time, is featuring Warrenton artist Judith Fredrickson. The AVA artist in residence, painter Annie Eskelin, who was my guest a few weeks, last month, I guess, is at 1170 Commercial upstairs from River Sea. And local artist Blaine Verley is at 80 11th Street. And so we have three of them. And then Luminary Arts has Mike Parnati with Collaborative Motion, Kinetic Motion Studies. And lots more art all over town. Do get into town and see the art. It's going to be a lot of fun. La Luna Loca is showing, Adagio, Sea Gypsy. Many of the local businesses stay open in order to feature artists. Quickly, though, theater is what's happening tonight. The Performing Arts Center, 12 Angry Men. Astoria High School, Wizard of Oz. Peninsula Players is the Ain't Retirement Grand, which they were on last week. It's a blast, I heard. Tappa is at the Barn Community Playhouse with Nothing Serious. The Hannon Playhouse in Raymond, it's a scream. And the Coaster Theater with the Apple Tree. And then also... Bay City Arts Center has Nestucca High School students, art reception 5 to 7. And Laurie Johnson at the library at 6.